In the narrow streets of Harlem, Holland stood the Beje, a quirky old house with a watch shop on the ground floor. Here lived the Ten Boom family. Father Casper, a masterful watchmaker known throughout town for his integrity, his daughters, Corey and Betsy, and a revolving cast of foster children and guests. Their home operated with an extraordinary open-door policy that seemed remarkable to outsiders, but entirely natural to them. The family's centennial celebration in 1937 transformed their street into a microcosm of Dutch society, the mayor sharing coffee with postmen, wealthy and poor children playing together, reflecting their deeply held belief that social status meant nothing in God's eyes. Every evening, without fail, they gathered for Bible reading, Father's deep voice bringing ancient wisdom into their daily lives. This foundation of faith would soon be tested beyond anything they could imagine. Corey's childhood provided the spiritual foundation for extraordinary strength. At six, reluctantly heading to school for the first time, she clung to the stair railing until Father gently unwound her fingers and led her forward, her first lesson in facing the unknown. When 10-year-old Corey asked about a difficult concept from a poem, Father responded by asking her to lift his heavy traveling case. When she couldn't, he explained that knowledge, like the suitcase, could be too heavy for children. She must trust him to carry it until she was older. After seeing a dead baby and becoming terrified of losing loved ones, Father comforted her with an analogy that would sustain her through future losses. "When do I give you your train ticket? Just before we get on the train. Our wise Father in heaven knows when we'll need things too." These early lessons, facing the unknown, trusting beyond understanding, and receiving strength when needed rather than in advance, prepared Corey for trials she could never have imagined. The peaceful rhythm of the Ten Boom household shattered in May 1940 when Nazi forces invaded Holland. What began as a seemingly bearable occupation gradually revealed its horror. Yellow stars marking Jewish citizens, businesses displaying "Jews will not be served" signs, and neighbors disappearing in the night. The family's moral crossroads came when a Jewish woman named Clearmaker knocked at their door after curfew, seeking refuge. Father's response was immediate. "In this household, God's people are always welcome." This simple act of compassion marked the beginning of their dangerous work. Soon, the Ten Booms were fully immersed in underground resistance, stealing ration cards for those without legal status, obtaining false identity papers, and creating a secret room in Corey's bedroom. A distinguished architect known only as Mr. Smith designed the hiding place, a false brick wall with a sliding panel concealing a narrow space where refugees could hide during raids. "The Gestapo could search for a year," Mr. Smith declared proudly. "They'll never find this one." Despite having friends in high places, the Ten Boom's secret work became widely known throughout Harlem. On February 28, 1944, while bedridden with influenza, Corey was awakened by a suspicious visitor claiming his wife had been arrested for hiding Jews. Hours later, the Gestapo raided the Beje. Though six refugees made it safely into the secret room, the Ten Booms were arrested. After 10 days in solitary confinement at Scheveningen Prison, Corey learned that Betsy was also imprisoned there, but Father's whereabouts remained unknown. In early May, a letter from her sister Noli arrived with devastating news. Father had died just 10 days after his arrest. During her imprisonment, Corey developed an unexpected relationship with Lieutenant Roms, a gentle-mannered officer who conducted her interrogations. Their conversations gradually shifted from formal questioning to discussions of faith, with the lieutenant revealing his own inner conflict. "I cannot bear the work I do here." By September 1944, Corey and Betsy found themselves transported to Ravensbrück, the notorious women's extermination camp in Germany. The conditions defied imagination. Acres of soot-gray barracks surrounded by wire-topped walls, straw infested with lice, and only thin coffee-colored liquid and turnip soup for sustenance. During processing, Corey faced her greatest challenge: how to keep their precious Bible. In a moment she could only attribute to divine intervention, she managed to smuggle it past the guards. This small book became the center of an ever-widening circle of help and hope as they began holding worship services in their barracks. Women gathered in growing numbers. Catholics recited the Magnificat in Latin. Lutherans whispered hymns. Orthodox women chanted prayers. Corey would translate the Dutch Bible text into German, then hear the words passed along in French, Polish, Russian, Czech. Remarkably, though guards patrolled constantly, they never discovered these gatherings. Betsy realized why. "Because of the fleas," she exclaimed triumphantly, recalling her earlier Thanksgiving for these creatures Corey had seen no purpose in. As December temperatures plummeted, Betsy's health deteriorated rapidly. Before being taken to the hospital for the final time, she shared visions of their future work, transforming concentration camps into places of healing where they would teach love to those warped by hate. Days later, Betsy died. Through a clerical error, Corey received an unexpected release and returned to Holland in early 1945. After attempting to resume her old life, she realized God had different work for her, fulfilling Betsy's vision. This began a remarkable global ministry. In 1946, she opened a rehabilitation center in a former concentration camp, creating a place of healing exactly as Betsy had envisioned. By age 76, Corey had traveled to 61 countries, sharing their message that joy runs deeper than despair. Perhaps her most powerful testimony came in 1947 when she encountered a former Ravensbrück guard after speaking at a church in Munich. When he approached, seeking forgiveness, Corey initially froze, unable to raise her hand. Then she prayed, "Jesus, help me," and felt warmth flow through her arm as she grasped his hand. "I forgive you, brother, with all my heart," she said, experiencing the healing power of forgiveness she would spend her life teaching others. Corrie ten Boom's life demonstrates that ordinary people can resist evil through small acts of courage, whether hiding the persecuted, sharing meager resources, or speaking truth to power. Her profound discovery that there is no pit so deep that God's love is not deeper still continues offering hope to those facing persecution, loss, and despair. What makes her story so enduring? Perhaps it's the raw honesty with which she confronts suffering while maintaining unshakable faith. Her remarkable journey reminds us that our greatest suffering often becomes the source of our greatest ministry. The very experiences that threatened to destroy her, imprisonment, loss, near death, became the foundation for a worldwide ministry of healing. This ordinary Dutch watchmaker's daughter, through extraordinary circumstances, became a worldwide ambassador of reconciliation. Her life proved that love is indeed the strongest force in the world, stronger than hatred, stronger than evil, stronger than death itself. In our increasingly divided world, her example calls us to something greater, the courage to love when it costs everything, to forgive the unforgivable, and to find purpose in our deepest pain.